Welcome to the RD2B podcast. Each week we sit down with a different registered dietitian nutritionist to showcase the diversity of opportunity in the dietetics profession. Our aim is to dismantle the notion that there is a traditional career path. I'm Carl Barnes, the registered dietitian behind the scenes of RD2B.
And I am Jenna Warnock, the RD2B host. Our RD guests share their stories, career paths, and advice to help students like us succeed in the profession. Welcome back to another week of the RD2B podcast. I'm your host, Jenna, and this week we're going to be sitting down with Terry Raymond. So she is a past president of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, but most notably, she's just always been such a headstrong dietitian for many, many years, and she's done so much in leadership roles, volunteering for the Academy in both the foundation and on certain committees, and she's just always been a giver for the profession. And so in this episode, we're just talking about her experience as a dietitian, skills she's learned along the way, and just advice that she has for future professionals in heading into the profession. So Terry, can you just first begin with just describing where your dietetics journey began? Because it's definitely, there's a whole lot of different avenues and things just kind of sharing with your journey, but just kind of starting from the beginning where it all began.
Well, it actually surprisingly started in my childhood. I was the daughter of two parents that both worked, which was unusual at the time. Usually mom was home taking care of kids, but I was an only child. They worked and I couldn't run around and play after school like other kids. They wanted me to stay in and be safe, do chores. And I was pretty tall for my age. So I started cooking at a very young age. I started cooking probably when I was 9. And I had children's, you know, beginner's cookbooks. You learned how to make biscuits and scalloped potatoes and meatloaf, things like that. And then I added to my repertoire, but I actually started cooking. And so I didn't know the word dietitian, but I loved food and I loved working with food and cooking and baking and garnishing. I started doing that when I was like in high school. And so it just, that's where it all began. It all began with food.
Mm-hmm. And Yeah, and definitely with almost every dietitian, for sure. Like, there's not a single dietitian that doesn't like food, because everyone in this profession loves it, and rightfully so, because, you know, it's art. And not only is it art, but it's art that you get to eat and that you get to share mm-hmm. with people. Like, there's so many different ways that food is just, it's good for the soul, it's good for everything. And whenever it came to, once you learned like about being a dietitian or about dietetics being a path, did you pursue it with a specific vision or a goal in mind? Because you kind of started more in like the culinary aspect of it and just kind of the cooking part. But whenever it came to you pursuing dietetics specifically, were you like, I'm going to do this, or this is my goal, or how did it pan out for you?
No, I actually, when I went off to college back in the day, most women either went into teaching or nursing. And I didn't have an interest in either one of those, but I did want a profession. So I thought, oh, I'll be a pharmacist. I had math and science in high school and did okay. And so I thought, this looks good. And I think it was probably in my second year, and I had inorganic chem before lunch. And that probably did me in. And I went, are you sure you want to get this involved in chemistry? Is this really your passion, where you want to be? And I gave it some thought. Went home for lunch and said, hey, I think I need to change my focus here a little bit. What can I do? And so I took out the catalog and I started looking through what used science and math as a base and that type of thing. And there was food nutrition, food technology, and it was housed with hospitality, as I remember. And it was in the home economics building at the time, not too far away from my living center. And I thought, this looks pretty good. And not only that, but I was still involved in doing food even in college. I was cooking for retreats. The college would provide me with a step van, and I could take the van, go down and pick up the groceries and plan the menu for people that were going away for retreats, maybe 10 to 60 miles away from the campus, and buy the food, load it up, get up to the, whatever it was, Camp Easter Sale, whatever it happened to be, and unload and then cook for the weekend. So I was in food, still doing food. Food and nutrition sounded good to me. And I loved the faculty and really enjoyed the students that I was there with. And so it was a marriage. I just went, wow, this is what I was meant to be, meant to do.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. And whenever you were taking that inorganic chemistry class, kind of how many years were you in college? And also, I think it was super interesting how you were able to find that, again, like that kind of food service culinary of still being able to cook while in college. And so how did you go about find so first, how did you go about finding that experience of being able to cook for retreats and things like that? Because I think that's super interesting.
I don't remember now, and I look back on it and I go, what in the world was in your head, and what were you thinking about, and how did you fall into that? I don't recall specifically something specific happening, and I wonder how I had the whatever to even take that on. Now when you look at food protection and that type of thing, I'm going, wow, you were taking people, going out. And I probably got to know a faculty member that was doing retreats or something and said, hey, yeah, I cook. And so it probably aligned at that point in time. And then they find out, they pass the word around, oh, this person can do this at a reasonable cost. I mean, I wasn't, it was toasted cheese sandwiches and spaghetti and just really basic food. I mean, it wasn't like it was some gourmet thing. But I did it and I loved it, and it kept me busy over weekends. And it wasn't like it was every weekend, but it certainly was nice to have that income. But I don't remember the specific event that was a catalyst for it. Just glad I had the experience. And I guess the whatever the guts, I guess you would say, to try to do it and to take it on. I'm not so sure I would, be willing to do that today with all the food protection and that type of thing, but there'd be a little bit more insurance involved. So things were a little simpler back in the day.
Oh yeah, no, and I feel like especially I mean, in the col like in the college phase of things or like early career, it's definitely say yes, ask questions later, or say yes, figure things out once you hit the ground running and things like that. And I think it sounds like with that experience, it was definitely a well, you love to cook and you loved like, cooking food for people. So then it was like, well, what more to think about? Say yes and then figure it out along the way. And I mean, I'm sure now it would be like you'd have to sign 15 documents, get it notarized, and then have three witnesses on the stand before you could do anything like that
Right.
now. But
Absolutely.
yeah, but
Yeah,
it
it
was
was.
good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the biggest thing I'd say, like, the biggest thing that I just find so interesting and great about your career, especially in dietetics, is that you've held so many leadership roles in this realm, especially in like food service within the academy, things like that. Like you've been the president of the academy, you've been on many committees within the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics on within their foundation. You've owned your own company consulting service for many, 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 many years. And you've just constantly climbed and pushed towards these leadership roles. And so can you kind of describe or kind of share with us where this kind of drive towards leadership, this drive towards leading began and just kind of how it sprouted into all these different roles.
Again, it's something I think that happened during childhood. I, being an only child, having to stay home, I spent a lot of time around adults. And I saw at that particular time, back in the day, there were a lot of insecure women, whether their husband had passed away, something else, tragedy had happened, and they had to take over the family. They had to go back to work. They had to figure out how to pay bills. And it was very, I saw a lot of discomfort. And I thought, boy, I don't want to do that. I want to be independent. I want to be secure. I don't want those things to happen to me. And I did a lot of how work to support families. I did housework. I ironed people's clothes, and that's how I came into contact with them. I learned their story, and I went, gee whiz, I really want to have something that provides the security for me. And if I want that, then I'm going to have to work really hard and be very responsible and not lose that job, that I have. And I think that drove me to take on more responsibility. And as you take on more responsibility, you're given more responsibility without even thinking about it. I mean, it wasn't a plan. I want to do this. I'm going to do this. This is going to be my next stepping stone. It was simply wanting to do more and to be there and to be responsible. And I think, you know, we didn't have psychological testing at that particular time. We didn't have Strength Finder. We didn't know, you know, what we were in Myers-Briggs. But what I did find out was, fortunately for me, a couple of my strengths were discipline and responsibility. Probably makes for kind of a boring individual, but it certainly supported me as I worked and took on more responsibility. It was there for me. And that's it. That's basically what drove me.
Oh, and as I mean, the millions of Spider-Man movies said, with great power comes great responsibility. And I mean, I think it's a great perspective to have, where it's like, it is good to have a vision in mind and it is good to work towards something. But really, if you have the good core values, that's really what matters. And that's kind of what drives you towards what's right for you and things like that, rather than I'm going to work towards this specific job and I'm going to check off this specific box. It's a good perspective to be like, the responsibility comes towards you. It's hard to seek it out. It's more so you accept it than you build upon it. And I don't think with having discipline and responsibility makes you boring. I think that, you know, that can branch out into, it's very helpful. And again, it's helped you just excel in just so many different aspects of dietetics. And so could you describe, so you're the owner of Dietitian Consulting Service. Can you just share with us your experience? And because I'm not even fully familiar with your experience in running that company and just kind of where it began and how it sprouted to now. Can you just kind of share, like, especially with us talking about leadership and things like that, what it looks like to you running it, you know, building it up, and just that whole thing and your experience with it?
I think I'll start back with first graduating and finding work. First of all, they were shutting the lights off in Seattle, and work was hard to find. And by the time I got out of school, I'd had management, a focus program at university, but I did my internship in hospital, and we all wanted to be hospital dietitians. So I lived my home, my real home where I'd grown up was 90 miles away from Seattle. I rented a car, took every exit that said hospital on it, stopped by and filled out an application. And there just wasn't a lot of work. So I picked up some side jobs. I did some summer relief down in Seattle at hospitals, and then picked up a couple of long-term care facilities. And then I ran into and was interviewed by a young entrepreneur that wanted to start a contract food service company that had worked for a national company. And he wanted to start his own and had a couple, three accounts. We interviewed once, and then 3 months later, we re-interviewed, and he needed somebody that understood nutrition and with menus, that type of thing. And then he had started with a few healthcare clients. And so I took that job, and we grew from, I got to start at the bottom of the stairs. And we grew from having 7 or 8 accounts in healthcare to 5 states, 75 accounts, and they were anything. They were healthcare, business and industry, schools, a total variety of things. And part of it, at one point in time, we purchased this company, Dietitian Consulting Service. It fit right in naturally into our healthcare portion, and so we bought it and added it in. So that was before we sold the company, which was right at the turn of the century. Sounds like it makes me ancient, turn of the century, holy smokes. Anyway, we in growing and building a company, one of the things that was just the coolest thing was opening myself up to other experiences and learning about not just healthcare, but getting involved in business and industry and getting involved with schools and community colleges and fairs. We did concession work. We took on everything. We had temporary to, full-time staff in facilities or places where we just consulted. So I learned all of those various aspects as I put myself out there and wanted, I volunteered, so to speak, to, can I go along with this? Can I go? And I went through all the stages of learning about different business and then getting involved in sales of business and getting, bringing new clients on, that type of thing. And so we decided, made a big decision to sell the company. It was the appropriate time for any number of reasons, sell the company around 1999, 2000, somewhere in there. And we sold it, and I wanted something. I certainly, as a dietitian, I wanted to make sure the dietitians were safe. The company that was buying us was not interested in healthcare out here in the Pacific Northwest. So, and I by then had bought into the company and owned a certain percentage of it. I wanted to protect the nutrition and dietetics professionals, and the best way was, as part of my buyout, to buy that company as part of my buyout from FMC. And that's what I did, and then I carried it forward to now, and hopefully finding people that want to take it over and continue to carry it forward. So it's kind of a long way around here, but that's it.
No, and I think it was also, I think saying turn of the century is very, it adds a very nice dramatic flair to it, turn of the century, turn new leaf. I think it adds to the, and another thing too is it was like, it's so, it was very noble and considerate to have the nutrition professionals in mind and to have those dietitians in mind in that company, because from what it sounds like is from what it started with to what it became by the time that you guys were planning on selling it, I'm sure it was massive, and that you guys did have like a good chunk of diet, just nutrition professionals or people in that aspect of the company that you didn't want them out of a job and you wanted to look after them and you wanted what was best for them as well. And I think like that is definitely, and we can definitely talk about it more, but just one of those good qualities and traits of a leader of looking out for those people and looking out for those that help you towards, the goal or that company or the people who kind of work under you. And so, kind of talking more about like your leadership experience and just your whole experience with fulfilling these roles, owning, like buying out your portion of the company and owning that part of the business. Were there specific skills, things you learned, or just big takeaways that have just kind of helped shape other decisions you've made as a dietitian or just other paths you've taken? Because it definitely sounds like this was a great experience to soak up as much as you could, ask those questions, volunteer to get involved as in as many different aspects outside of just nutrition as possible, like the business, sales, marketing, all that good stuff. But are there like other specific skills that you kind of took with you to other roles you did, like or other volunteering that you did within the Academy of Nutrition Dietetics or things like that?
Well, first of all, I'm going to back up a little bit and say those nutrition professionals that worked for the company, I wouldn't have been able to do what I did if it weren't for them. The capabilities and competencies that they brought to the table allowed me to step outside of nutrition. They took over the nutrition portion and healthcare portion of the company, and I was allowed then to do other things and get involved with other things. And I couldn't, I don't want to start listing names here because it wouldn't be fair. Everybody touched the company and blessed it with their time, and it wouldn't have been the same. And that's, first of all, what I want to mention here, because it goes without saying that they were all amazing. And I can remember hiring the very first dietitian that I hired, and then getting involved with students and preceptoring and having those students go to work for us was just so utterly rewarding. And to see them develop into the people that they became was just is fantastic. I think as far as other skills, you certainly having responsibility is key. But there's a couple of things in working in business. One of them is kind of a funny thing. It's called buying time. Everything happens at once. People want, maybe somebody wants our service and wants to open at the same time that you've got a big banquet going on in another account, and they're in this facility's out of state, and you have to travel. What are you going to do? How to manage it all? It's kind of like when you walk into your hospital and you find out that in the wing that you're taking care of, they've had 20 new admits and they want them all seen today before you go home. How do you set your priorities, and how do you manage to keep everybody happy and working around and get it done, but maneuver it so that everything works out? So that's really a key thing, is to buy a little time to express to people, I want the very best to happen here. So I think we're going to suggest this, we're going to do this. But you're always buying time, you're always working it out, getting somebody hired, getting them trained, having them prepared to do whatever it is. There's just, it's all those pieces. It's like a big puzzle and you're putting all the pieces together. So buying time is really essential, and it's a people. No matter what you do, there are very few jobs that don't involve people. And so having those people skills and understanding that business is people, and it, whether you're working with, you're working for, you're working around, it's all about people. And so developing and really listening to people, hearing what they're saying, and understanding how their lives are being affected by what you might be doing and bringing into their life. So, I
Yeah,
don't
no,
know
I
if I
think
went.
that's no, that was a great, and I like how it was definitely, because like there's so many generic skills you could say where it's like, oh, communicating, oh, delegating, like there's so many different like kind of surface level skills, but kind of the unique one of just buying time, because you want to maximize your time to be able to do as much as you can with the company or do as much as you can with the resources that you have. But that might mean having to allocate more resources towards things, or like with what you said with thanking the diet, like you wouldn't be able to do what you could have done in the company without those dietitians, without those nutrition professionals helping you, because they bought you time to do those other things. And it's definitely like a reciprocated thing for all of them. And like with what you said with, a business is a people and everything involves people. No matter how cooped up you are in a room or how out in the open you are, there are always going to be people, especially in the dietetics profession that we're engaging with. I mean, we're engaging with peers, we're engaging with the public, like we're talking to everyone. And so this is just kind of, a personal question, but also just for students who may be, more reserved, more introverted, definitely not that outgoing, bubbly people person, as I'm sure we both are and have been, just with, lots of different experiences. But do you have any advice just for ways that people can get those people skills, to get those just kind of ways that they can put themselves out there to get familiar with that territory? Because I know for me, I'm very much introverted and not and very reserved, and I'm not one to really go out there very excited. Like it definitely takes a lot of energy and it takes a lot of preparation to really commit to something. But do you have any advice of like where students or people wanting or dietetics students, what they can kind of do to help get into that space and be more comfortable with it?
I don't think, I wouldn't say that introversion isn't necessarily a problem or a challenge, because you want to listen, you want to hear, you want to focus. And if you listen well to what's going on, to what people are saying to you, to what they're doing, and really hear them and respond to them, they'll naturally support you in what you're doing. So it isn't a matter of being the big spark and running into the room and, hey folks, we're all here. It's more about understanding the people that you're working with and how you can best help them to do whatever work or job or whatever it happens to be. How can you do that? What signals are you hearing by being a good listener? What signals are they sending you, and how can you best hear that patient, and do what that patient needs? Or if you're working in a kitchen, what's the crew talking about? What's the jabber? What's the gossip? And get comfortable with them. I'm going to tell you a crazy story. In one, a small facility that I went into, there were cooks, and they were like, "Oh, here comes this young know-it-all, right? What is she doing here?" They'd never had a dietitian before. They didn't have any reason to have a dietitian. And on Thursdays, which happened to be the day that I was going in there, they served tongue in the facility. Now, not many people have probably heard about tongue. It's a very rich meat, but it kind of grosses a lot of people out. Well, I went into the kitchen on Thursday and I peeled tongue, even though it's not maybe my most favorite job in the world. I peeled tongue with these folks and got to know them and listened to, and that way I learned what were some of the challenges that were going on in the dietary department. What was it in, getting the product in and to work with? Was there a problem in communication? How were they dealing with the residents in the facility? That type of thing. So sometimes you do things that nobody else wants to do, and it really pays back. Another thing is sometimes we get very focused on our lives, and it's kind of a 9 to 5 situation. Any time that I've put in extra time when I could, when the situation seemed to call for it, it has rewarded me. Whether I what I've learned in those little extra moments, what people have shared with me, what maybe somebody called, maybe somebody needed something and knew that they could rely, on that person to be there for me, whether me in this case, to be there, it made huge difference. And it opened the doors for greater communication, for their support, a mutual support type of system. So it's a matter of just being there when you need to be there, doing things that maybe nobody else wants to do, and having people feel comfortable in working with you and in supporting you as you support them.
Yeah, no, that's so, again, there's so many just great things with that. And also, I think it's great to highlight where how effort pays off and the effort of building relationships, the effort of listening, the effort of doing the dirty work. Like, those things definitely never go unnoticed. And also, it's like it's hard to get to know someone if you're not willing to go through or experience what they're doing or what they've done. Like, I can almost say with confidence that no one wants to volunteer to peel tongue, or no one, like no one,
Oh,
I
come
can't
on.
say I've had, any volunteers come my way like wanting to peel tongue or anything, but like again, it's like show don't tell, like that type of thing. Effort, it's hard to tell effort. You have to show effort. And it also has to be meaningful, and you can tell, and there's so many nuances to it for sure, because I mean, I've read, books on building relationships and kind of how to have good rapport with people. And it's like this balance of like, you want to show that you care, but not from the manipulative standpoint of you're purely showing that you care so that they can care. It's like it has to come from a sense of being genuine. Like you want to build a genuine relationship with these people. You want to genuinely hear them out. You want to genuinely build their trust, because really that's the only way that you can have that like two-way street of communication and actually like collaborating and things like that. And just the notion of hard work does pay off. And like if you really do want to work towards something like building a better relationship or getting those people skills, effort more, you have to put some extra hours into it, or you have to put some more effort just into those areas that some people might not think to put more effort into. And like, and it's been seen with your experience with dietitian consulting and that company of, starting the ground up. I'm sure that that really helped build trust with the employees, because you started from the very beginning and you stuck with it throughout all of its growth and all of it, getting to know all the different employees, getting to know the ins and outs, learn, the different departments of sales, business, marketing, things like that, and having trust in all those people. Effort was required, or else none of the things would have gotten done. And it's definitely something that no one has to wait for the RD credential to start putting in the effort. No one has to wait to get those people skills. No one has to wait to talk to anyone to, get those skills and kind of just really collaborate with people, because I mean, I'm sure COVID's definitely not helped with isolating and making people feel more on their own, but really it's like people make the world go round, not one person, not, you know, a singularity. It's like we make the world go round, and there's really no other way around it. And it's really great to just hear and see how, you know, that hard work and just all that collaborating and how it's paid off and things like that. And another thing that I kind of wanted to talk about too, just with your experience in the company, and it doesn't have to be just your experience at the company, but you've done so much for the dietetics profession as a dietitian in food service with consulting. You've done so much. But whenever it comes, and that means I'm sure you've had a bunch of challenges or just barriers that you've experienced throughout your experience. But is there one that specifically stands out to you, or one that you remember that you learned something from, or that you had a big takeaway from that kind of helped build your character and kind of help you in future just experiences or endeavors and things like that? Because I'm sure running a business has its challenges. Being a president of the academy has its challenges. But if a certain thing sticks out to you.
I think there's one word that really fits the bill. And it's something that I encountered when I first started, and certainly when we sold the main company, and that's change. You know, we were, as a contract food service company, we were wicked back in the day. I mean, I was working for a wicked entity, because contract food service, all they did was come in and fire everybody, and you were gone, you lost your job, whatever. And that just wasn't the case, and certainly not the case with us. But we were bringing change in, and it was interesting to watch people. Some would leave before we even started, thinking that, oh, the wicked things that were going to happen. And some stayed there and remained and stayed and worked with us as we moved forward. And we obviously have been brought in for a reason, whether it was cost savings or, you know, streamlining the operation, whatever, or maybe preparing them for something else that was coming down the road. But it was one of the key things that I learned immediately and was taught is you don't do any change when you start an operation. And this is really important to, I just lived it. We lived it. You don't do any change when you walk in. You walk in, you introduce yourself, you get to know the people. You go in with the first person in the morning and stay throughout the day until the last person leaves at night. And you take notes. It's not like you're running around with a lab coat testing people, but you're keeping track of who's doing what and why and how it connects with other people. Because change, if you go into a system and you put change here, it affects so many other things. That's why change is so difficult, because it has all this fallout, which may be good, bad, you know, anywhere in between. But we went in and got to know folks, got them to know us. And then we found out even more, some of those things we didn't want to find out, but we found them out anyway. And then you work around that, and you work through it, and you work with the people in creating the change that everybody really in the end wants to see. And so that change was always the stickler, and change was always going on. Sometimes when, you know, we hired a dietitian, worked with her for years, and then she left, I felt like I was getting left behind, and that person was moving on. So there was all this change that was always going on. And then when we decided to sell the company, I actually had gone back to school to organizational systems renewal, which is change leadership. And I knew that we were going to need that. It was a big move to sell a corporation that had anywhere between 500 and 750 people, and change their lives. And the decision that we made to do that, how are we going to prepare? And actually, even when I started the course, I didn't understand that it was going to be that focused on change or even that supportive of what I was doing. It just turned out that way. And I was able to apply things that I learned. I was in a cohort in class, and we learned we experience change together. That's how we learned it. And so I was able to take some of that knowledge back and create opportunities for the leadership within our organization to learn about change and work with it, you know, when it comes, and be supportive of the people that are obviously going to want and need it during that period. So that's change was always upon us, and it was something that had to be handled with care. With care, it just as you handle the people with care, you handle change with care.
Yeah, and I think that's, again, like, that's so true. And yeah, just because, I mean, I definitely feel like a lot of dietetic students, they're very type A, and they're like, oh, if things don't go exactly how I want, I plan, then that means everything's wrong. That means, like, I need to, like, think 10 steps ahead instead of 5 steps ahead to, like, fix the thing, you know, the change happening or the things going on, when really it's like, there's a really good perspective that you put to it, where first you have to know your bearings before you can actually change or do anything, or actually change things for the better, or kind of adapt and things like that. Like, you can't just go in being like, I'm going to completely scrap this, start a new leaf, we're going to change all these things. You have to take some time to actually breathe in, you know, like, stop to smell the roses or things like that. You know, you have to actually, like, get a feel before you can even know where change needs to be had, or how you even need to adapt to that situation, where, because everyone just, like, wants to hop into the next thing, blaze through it, check it off, and then just hop to the next thing, and then just keep going, where people forget, where it's like, okay, let me actually know what's going on before anything happening and things like that. And that also handling it with care and things like that, because, like, for example, I believe you handled it with care by pursuing that master's, you know, that degree in that specialized in change in an organization. Like, that is you approaching change with care, because you had all these people in mind. You had that over almost 750 employees in mind. You had this business in mind. And it's always good to have the big picture when going through those changes, because you don't want to lose sight of anything, or you don't want anything to get slipped under. And it's just really good to keep those things in mind, so that whenever you do go through that process, it's not like change is supposed to be painful. It's supposed to be uncomfortable, but it makes it more bearable, you know, or it just makes it the right type of discomfort, not anything that's painful, but it makes it the type of discomfort that change should be, so that you end up better in the long run, and that, you know, it's put to good use, the change and things like that. And so we've talked a great deal just about really just good ideas that almost everyone should have, regardless of dietetics. But I feel like it definitely applies well to dietetics, just because things are changing a lot in our profession. Leadership is a crucial role, and also understanding people and understanding the importance of relationships is also just as important in dietetics. But whenever we actually get to talking just about the profession as a whole and your experience in the profession, is there anything in dietetics right now, or things that you've seen that you think is underrepresented or just not talked enough about?
I think it depends on what area of dietetics that you work in and the particular time frame. I've been around for a long time now, so I can remember when we, you know, men were underrepresented in our profession, and they still are. And now we're looking at different cultures and diversity within our profession, and having it be represented. And depending on when I started out in business, the wicked contract food service business, which has since been learned that it's not so wicked after all, that we were underrepresented, people in business and the people in food sales, that type of thing. So it depends on the time frame and where you're looking at, how you might feel is underrepresented. But everything is always changing, as we've talked about change. And so that can occur. The other part of your question is kind of interesting. And say that again. You talked about underrepresented, but also that we don't think about enough, or what we might not be considering. I think one of those I have two ideas on that. And the one would be the future. We've got the House, committees, everybody looking at the future. But are we looking at one block or 5 blocks or 5 miles? And do we have other professionals involved with us that are helping us see, where we're going and how we can have the impact that we want to have? There's never enough discussion about the future. I've always dreamed of having like a futurist on the board, somebody that can give you an idea of what's coming and how you might fit into that and how you can have the greatest impact. I think that to me is immense, and it would be very, very helpful. And the more time that we spend thinking and talking about that and getting involved in the future. And you can see with all the change that's happened, it probably you're living it. And but if you look at the difference between 20 years ago and today, it's really unfathomable, the amount of change. And then and you throw in COVID on top of it, just as a garnish, the amount, and we couldn't have probably predicted that. Probably nobody saw that necessarily coming. But that plan for future is just so needed for us. So.
Yeah, and I think definitely, just to tack on to that, like having like the people who are part of the future are the young professionals or are the students and are the people who are going to be entering the profession. Like they are part of the future, and their thoughts, perspective, ideas are equally as important as the professionals or as the people who are like running the academy or running those committees and are help setting us up for the future. And I agree with what you said, where it is important that we collaborate with other professionals and that we actually hear other people out, because, dietitians have struggled for a long time to get their voices heard in healthcare or just kind of getting that proper representation. Well, that starts with having a conversation with those medical professionals, and it kind of starts with collaborating with those other professions so that they know who we are, they're aware of what we do, and getting that conversation starting, using those people skills, listening to what they have to say. Maybe it's like we have to understand why we haven't had a spot at the table and hear their perspective before we can actually move forward to find the most effective way to be heard in the profession, to actually make impact and things like that. And it really, like a catalyst for that are the students, are the young professionals, or just the new professionals, because we have a bunch of career changers now, which they have their great new perspectives, they have their own experiences that are equally as important as well. And so like again, and it boils down to just like that effort and that listening and just having the future in mind and being aware of how far down we're thinking and how far down we're planning. All of those things are super important and crucial for dietetics. And do you have anything in mind for the future that you would want to see in dietetics, or just things that you're hopeful for, or things that you want to see?
Well, I'm going to go take a step back into what we were just talking about,
Oh,
because you
yeah.
brought up some thoughts to my mind on the other point that I wanted to make, an area that we need to seek out, and that is we know who we are. Has it really changed over the years with percentage-wise of the population that understand what a nutrition professional is, whether it's a dietitian or a nutrition and dietitian technician registered? Do they really understand who we are and what we do? And we need to step outside of ourselves and get involved with, and you brought that up, and I wanted to really make a point about that. We know who we are. And when we bring people from the outside, they get to know who we are and they get all excited about what we can bring to the table, how we set the table, et cetera, et cetera. But do people really know us? I can remember when we were first mentioned on, it was a medical series on TV, and they mentioned the dietitian in the hospital, and we were all thrilled. And certainly all of our social media people are getting out there and letting people know what we do, what we bring to the table, et cetera. But we really need to step out more and get more people to understand who we are. We can bring folks in to sit on the board as advisors. We can bring people into committees, but we also need to step out. Mm-hmm. We need to step out in and get involved and show people and have more people understand who we are and what we do and how it can affect their lives. We can have an impact on people's lives from start to finish, and for sure. And so we need to get out there. And there's got to be, we have to develop new roads to do that. You were asking about what I see or what I'd like to see us in the future in our profession. I'd like us to gain more knowledge to have a greater impact on people. I'd like to see us, and it starts with research. It starts with research and supporting research and understanding research for all of us. I don't care if we work in a hospital, if we work in a food service operation. Research, we're evidence-based. We need to have that strength. We need to have the knowledge and the support there. We also need to fill in that spectrum from farm to table and understand how involved and supportive we can be in preventative healthcare. Our healthcare is really a program of reaction rather than to prevent. And yet in my mind, I see food and exercise as being the basis of preventative healthcare. And there's other things I'm sure too that need to be included, but we are really the strength of that. We set the table for that. And I can see us, you know, having a greater impact throughout the whole picture of food, where it comes from, how it's used. I was told 20 years ago that basically the planet was out of fresh water. Well, you know, with the growing population, you know, where are we going to be with food? And where are we going to be with nutrient dense foods? Mm-hmm. How, you know, we have to have impact there, and we have to have the knowledge to be able to do it. And, you know, one of the biggest areas, too, is preventative healthcare. When are we going to get really involved and bring people on board and get excited about understanding that food is more than just a tasty hamburger and a nice cold milkshake or whatever it happens to be? It's nourishing our body and preventing so many things and really integrative to our whole lives. So I get a little passionate, as you can see.
Rightfully so.
and that's the amazing thing about our field. You can go anywhere. You can do anything. Everybody eats. Everybody has to be nourished. They may not take in food the way that we normally take it in, but there's nourishment. There is support, and so therefore, we can really bring everybody to the table. I've seen it in facility and organizations where we kind of touch and feel everybody in an interdisciplinary, multidisciplinary, interoperative. We have the power and ability to bring everybody to the table, so to speak. A little metaphor there, mm-hmm. but we can do it. And we just have to capitalize on what we do know, learn more, and, you know, continue to be evidence-based and to understand what we have impact throughout the entire life of someone, their entire life, we're there, and we can be involved. So get off my soapbox now. But
no, but that was such a nice and wonderful soapbox. No, and I think the profession needs to be more excited about what we can do. And the profession needs to be, again, with like what you said, we need to capitalize on our strengths while also growing into our knowledge even more, because there's still so much, because everyone's body reacts differently to the same food, you know, like everyone's body is so unique. Even if you put the same banana or apple or whatever on the table, everyone's body's going to handle that differently. And so it's like, there's so many different things that we can explore more into and that we shouldn't be scared of. And we already have so much knowledge and so much capability at our disposal. We just have to have the confidence. We have to have the assurance that like we do have the ability to bring everyone at the table. Like there's dietitians in so many different roles and so many different just aspects. I mean, that's the whole purpose of this podcast, is to bring light to all these different dietitians working in so many different fields and how it doesn't end at a hospital. And it doesn't have to, And that doesn't make it a bad thing or anything. Like, where it doesn't end at a hospital, doesn't end in food service. It is a never-ending profession because people are going to never-endingly eat. Like, we're just going to, everyone, no matter what, like with what you said, is going to eat. And we have to be there to make sure that people eat the right foods so that they can live the best life, not the longest life, but the best life. And, it's like there's so many nuances that we as professionals are the experts in, and we just have to have that confidence. And so the last question that I do have is really just for the students, just students like me, students that are wanting to become a registered dietitian. Are there any like just last words or just pieces of advice or things that you would want them to know heading into the profession? Because you brought up so many great points about we do have a spot at the table. We do have immense power and ability as dietitians or as nutrition professionals. But do you have any advice or just things that you would want students to know entering the profession?
Well, and then speaking and backing up a little bit and talking about the opportunities now, as we have more and more cultures getting larger and larger populations in this country, we have such an opportunity to learn about other people's foods, their habits, what supports them, what nourishes them. That's just goes without saying. It's an ideal time to fusion, everybody's foods and their likes and so forth together. I think for students, be flexible. Be flexible. You may have a dream, I want to do this, and that may be the thing for you, but you never know. So go, I wanted to be a clinical dietitian. That's not exactly what I turned out to be, but I'm extraordinarily happy with all the experiences that I had. And if I hadn't have been somewhat flexible and open to it and learning every job that you take, we were told back in the day that you shouldn't take a job, you should stay at a job for at least a year. Now we know that moving forward, people are going to stop in here, work for a bit, share their competencies at this job and this job and this job. But remember when you're sharing those competencies that you're also, and particularly in the beginning of your profession, you're learning from all the people that you're working with all the opportunities. Give it a chance, even if, because no two people are going to experience the same job the same way. It's going to be different. And part of it's what you put into it. But remember, you're learning. It's on the job learning. It's not just learning your own skills. You're learning about everybody else that you're working with and what they bring. And you want those nuggets, to come towards you. Some of the best things that happened to me that opened up doors were not by people I was working with, were not from my profession necessarily, but there were people on the outside that got to know me and said, "You should do this. You should do trade shows to show what you're doing. You should get involved with doctors, over here. You should do these things." And those are you've got to be open to that, and let people know who you are, find out who they are, and work it both ways. And while you're doing this, oh, by the way, I really believe in volunteering. Volunteer in your community, volunteer in your profession. Volunteer to do things that nobody else wants to do wherever you're working. And you will learn so much. The repayment of that, as I was going through the different steps at Food Management Corporation, I was also volunteering as a in my profession and also working with an organization, a social organization here in Seroptimus, which is involved in helping women and children throughout the world. And all of those opportunities, the volunteer opportunities, gave me an opportunity to learn about leadership, with my peers outside of the work area. And it gave me confidence when I went back. So you be flexible, be open, volunteer, get different experiences. That will all add into your capacity and your competencies of whatever you choose to do. There's just no end to it. And one of the toughest things is to be around your peers. Everybody has such different knowledge and it's I can remember the first time that I got involved at the state level, and I just looked at those people and went, oh my goodness, look at all these amazing things that they've done. And there was actually a president of the academy that was here in Seattle that I just kind of revered and walked around. I never even thought about, never even gave it a second thought about doing that myself at all. It never even was a consideration, but I was in awe. But that's a great place to learn and to share and to be open and to let down, and also the diversity. We're so different across the country. It not just because of all the different cultures and that type of thing that have come into our country, but we're just diverse. Everything is different from state to state. Rules, regulations, compacts, everything is different state to state to state. Licensing, everything. And what you learn and about all different aspects, laws, government, policy, politics, everything just gets put in. So I better stop. I'm just taking off here.
No, but it's like, because the thing being is, it's not something to be overwhelmed about. It's something to be excited about, you know? Like, and it's rightfully so, because there's so many great things that you've said, and there's so many things that you, because you're speaking from experience. You know from experience that being flexible pays off. You know from experience volunteering pays off. You know from experience that diversity is like one of the greatest things, and learning has so many great payouts. You're speaking from such excitement because you know firsthand the benefits. You know firsthand the immense positives that come from putting in that extra effort, volunteering your time, getting involved, getting those people skills, listening to people. And again, like you said, the phrase, let people like get people, have people get to know you, but also get to know them. Like, have it be a two-way street. Like, again, it makes perfect sense to be so excited about those things, because I know from people listening, they're like, that's a lot of stuff to do, but it's also like you have a lifetime to do these things. You have, and it's like there's no need to rush. Like, you don't have to do all of these things all at once. I mean, the most successful people out there, and definitely you're no exception to that, like, you didn't do all these things all at once. You know, you didn't become president of the academy overnight. You didn't own the dietitian consulting business overnight. These things, they took time to cultivate those relationships. It took time for you to cultivate those skills, took you time to learn. Like, we're all in this go-go-go mentality where, again, we have to listen. We have to stop and smell those roses. We have to actually experience life in order to get things out of life. And so, Terry, thank you so much for just taking time to just share your experience, share such great vast knowledge just to both dietetic students and the future professionals. And that, again, there's nothing to be worried or overwhelmed about, only things to be excited about. So thank you so much, Terry.
You bet. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity of sharing.